From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Wednesday when NPR's Ari Shapiro interviewed Senator Bernie Sanders. The senator was fresh off a big upset, winning the Michigan primary on Tuesday night. Now, Nate Silver, the man who correctly predicted every state outcome in the past two presidential elections and a man who's become known as a kind of genius of statistical modeling, had given Hillary Clinton a 99% chance to win Michigan, and Senator Sanders won. So Sanders was emboldened, and he told NPR that the calendar is about to become much more favorable to his campaign. He thinks it's going to go on for a while. Democrats are watching Republicans capitulate to Donald Trump. This hour, we look at the state of the Democratic race as it finally makes its way toward the New York State primary here. We could see the candidates come through our region, particularly if the race is still being contested next month. We vote on April 19th. And regardless of the nominee, can the Democrats unify? Voters typically fall in line, even after heated primary battles. We saw that in 08. You can look at any number of years. Well, yesterday I got an email from a local voter who told me it's either Bernie Sanders for him or Donald Trump. Does that sound realistic? Our panel consists of two supporters each for Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, and we are going to introduce them now. Larry Knox is here. He's a political and community coordinator for 1199 SEIU in Monroe County and a veteran in local and national political campaigns. Larry, nice to have you. How are you, sir?
Good. Thanks, Evan.
Close to the mics, everyone. That's the rule. Larry, even you. There you go. Trish LaPelle is here. She's also supporting Hillary Clinton. She's a local farmer and taking some time off to come in and talk on the radio today. Nice to see you, Trish. How are you?
Thanks, Evan.
Also here, Jason Peck, a visiting professor at the University of Rochester. Important to point out, he's here representing himself, not the university. He's a Bernie Sanders supporter. And Jason, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
And Karen Vitale is here, a city resident and a Democratic socialist. So you know Bernie Sanders' political philosophy quite well.
I sure do.
Very good. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I want to listen to what Bernie Sanders told Ari Shapiro first and foremost here. This is on his chances going forward, and this is what he told All Things Considered on Wednesday.
You are looking at large states like New York State, where we think we have a pretty good chance to win. You're looking at the West Coast, where I think we have an excellent chance to win in California, Oregon, Washington State, Hawaii, smaller states like Montana and Idaho. So I think that the coming primaries and caucuses actually favor us.
Okay, and he didn't say Hillary Clinton was a senator from New York. We're going to try to do well there. He said, we think we can win. Karen, you think he can win here?
I think it's very exciting. I do.
Why do you think he can actually win here?
Well, I think that the best states for Hillary Clinton are behind her, and the best states for Bernie Sanders are yet ahead. We haven't really had a contested primary in New York State because of how late we are on the schedule since 2000, and that was a Republican race. But I think that at the same time, it's going to be a challenge for Bernie. I think he has a steep hill to climb because we are, in fact, the state that has Wall Street, but we are also the state that gave birth to the Occupy Wall Street movement. I think there's a lot of cronyism at the state level in politics, including in Democratic politics. So there will be a lot of political operatives, I think, lining up with Hillary. And yet we have more millennials in Brooklyn than the state of Mississippi has millennials. So I think we're the Rust Belt here in Western New York. I think Bernie's message about the Rust Belt and the free trade agreements and NAFTA is going to ring true for Western New York. We've lost our manufacturing base, and I think these issues are deeply held and widely held. So I'm very enthusiastic.
Jason Peck, first of all, do you agree? And second of all, do you suspect more people are actually going to start organizing, getting involved in various ways as we get closer to April 19th?
Absolutely. As you see across the country, once people hear Bernie Sanders' message, they often will agree with him and join his campaign. He has a lot of enthusiasm behind him. But I think one of the more important things to remember is if you look at the actual numbers, I think things are going to look quite good for Senator Sanders. And I think part of the reason why the numbers look good is because Michigan was so incorrect, basically, in terms of how.
Though to be fair, Jason, Dave Weigel from the Washington Post said he couldn't even count the number of people who he bumped into who said, I'm a Hillary supporter. I saw the polls. I listened to Nate Silver. I voted for Kasich. I'm not saying I don't know what swung it. I certainly would not say that that is the only thing. What I'm saying is there's a lot of strange things that happen in primaries, especially open primaries, right?
Absolutely. But if you look at, for example, some of the numbers, for example, in New York State, in head-to-head matchups against Republicans, Bernie Sanders has a higher margin of victory. If you look at, for example, the support among Sanders supporters in New York State under 35, he has the under 35 vote. Also, if you look at the distinction between upstate and in the downstate, again, Hillary Clinton wins in both, but she wins by a significantly less margin in upstate New York because the voting base in New York, very similar to states like Michigan and states like Ohio, where Sanders is quite competitive.
Okay, Trish LaPelle, Donald Trump said that there's no one in the history of the universe more popular in upstate New York than him. So beyond Donald Trump, a lot of Clinton supporters have said, she was a senator here. We saw plenty of her. She should do very well here. How do you suspect she should do on April 19th?
Well, as far as Western New York is concerned, I do see Sanders being much more in play because Western New York is so white. You know, I mean, it's not very representative of the rest of the country or, you know, the lower half of New York State. So I would say, sure. I think a lot of white voters up here are really relating to his message, especially younger ones.
Are you suspecting that Clinton supporters are now feeling a little more urgency to get involved as we get closer to April 19th?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I hope we are. I hope we're finally proud enough to say that we get behind her and we support her and we think that she's going to be a fantastic president.
Okay. Larry, when it comes to some of the organizing that you're familiar with, you've worked on many campaigns on a lot of different levels. What is the kind of factor you think that could sway New York State here? Bernie Sanders thinking it actually win. When you look at the demographics, when you look at who votes, when you look at organizing, what do you expect for April 19th?
Well, you know, her national campaign headquarters is in Brooklyn, you know, and she was a very popular senator from our state for many years. She still has very high popularity. People know her well here. And she can actually, you know, if the campaign is continuing when it gets here, she can actually point to different parts of every state, of every county, things she did when she was our senator to help them and have, you know, elected officials, community groups, unions that can also say, yes, when you were our senator, you did X, Y, and Z to remind voters. Like, you know, like was mentioned, she's winning in upstate against Sanders. She's winning in the city against Sanders. And she has a long history of work that she's done in the state that people will know and will be reminded of as it comes closer to the election. I mean, you know, Senator Sanders, again, has done a lot of good stuff. He's a great guy. He's, you know, originally from the city. But, you know, Hillary, as our senator, you know, did a lot of work and has a lot of people that remember the work she did. And I think as it comes closer, not just with the national, you know, issues that she'll be talking about, she'll be able to remind people, though, remember when I was your senator, X, Y, and Z happened. I was a part of that. And I think that's going to be one of the deciding factors and something that Sanders isn't going to be able to say to voters that she will be able to.
Do you suspect we're going to see more of the basic machinery of campaigns? And I talked to somebody earlier this week who's done some organizing who said until Michigan, there wasn't a whole lot of getting phone calls back from the national Clinton office. And now we're seeing signs show up. We're seeing more bumper stickers. We're seeing more.
Yeah, I think regardless of what happened in Michigan, as it gets closer to the primary in our state, things would heat up. I mean, obviously, in September, October, November, when New York was so far away, the Hillary and Sanders campaigns were concentrating on those states that were there. So as we get closer to, you know, our state, you know, next month, that would start to heat up, which is happening now. And I really anticipate and am seeing that, you know, as the Sanders campaign is getting more active and getting more engaged, you know, the Clinton campaign also, as our state comes closer, will start doing that. I mean, I think they see this as a state that, you know, they're going to have big victories in and plan on making that happen. And I don't see worry as much as, okay, this is next up, let's, you know, knock it out. And that's what the plan is.
Now, listeners, if you want to join the program, you can call toll-free 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We'll take some of your phone calls, and we'll also get some of your feedback via email and Twitter if you want to weigh in that way. But before we start doing that, I kind of want to ask about the possibility of, you know, when this starts to be a possible detriment to whoever the candidate is and whether there will be unity. So let me start on the Clinton side and we'll work back to the Sanders side here. Because Trish LaPelle, you're someone who not only supports Hillary Clinton, I suspect a lot of supporters of Hillary Clinton thought that, not that it would be over by now, but that maybe there'd be more coalescing going on as opposed to what looks like a long campaign, maybe something more similar to 2008. Is there a point where you start to worry that this could become a detriment, that we're depleting resources taking away from the general, that you're denting whoever the nominee is going to be for the general as opposed to unifying, or is this healthy?
I think the Democrats are usually more healthy than the Republicans when it comes to an extended primary. But I am starting to notice that there seems to be some fracturing between the two sides, that people seem to be less interested in finding the common ground than really sort of picking at maybe some individual differences that we should be able to get ahead of. And if Bernie Sanders supporters are as concerned about Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, I mean, I think they're both, you know, the same, coming out of the same room as far as being concerning. Yeah. I think we need to start looking for some common ground and getting over whatever we need to get over to concentrate on November.
So this is starting to hurt.
I don't know if it's hurting, mm-hmm. but I don't think Michigan was good for anyone who was hoping that Hillary would be the nominee by now.
Okay. Larry, you think this is hurting?
No. I mean, I think I get reminded back to during one of the earlier debates when both candidates said, you know, on their worst day, you know, they're better than any of the Republicans that are up there running. I think we all, both sides, believe that. So I think this campaign has, you know, moved Hillary to the left a bit, which I think is good. And I think this campaign, you know, has helped Sanders sharpen his messaging, which I think is good for Democrats. You know, no matter who's the nominee, I'm sure it will be Hillary. But, you know, as it gets closer to Election Day, having both those people, you know, who've inspired and got a lot of people engaged over the campaign working towards getting, you know, a Democrat elected, who will be Hillary, you know, and the presidency is very important. Compared to, you know, your question about, you know, going down, are we hurting each other? Compared to what the Republicans are doing, not at all. I mean, they're cannibalizing their party. I mean, all the stuff that's going on with turning people away.
Did you watch the debate last night? That was more kumbaya, man. That was not cannibalizing.
That was different. You know, they should have been doing that, you know, many debates ago. But I think, you know, that's a calculation they're doing when they realize, and even Rubio apologized for some of the work he was doing. But they're not, I think, for those swing voters and people that aren't on the far right, who are mainly the people that are voting for Trump and Cruz right now, if they look at the debates between Hillary and Senator Clinton and Senator Sanders, and you look at the Republican debates, yeah, you see issue differences and some, you know, some back and forth between our candidates that we're supporting, but they see people talking about issues, you know. And if you look at the other side, as that continues and it continues on, you see what you saw, you see craziness, literally. That's not even talking about what goes on at the rallies, you know, just on the stage. So I think for us, yeah, it'd be nice if it was over for the Clinton campaign so we could start concentrating in the general. I'm sure Sanders' campaign would feel the same, but, you know, they are 95% issue-based in their campaigns. They're expanding the electorate, I think, by talking about these issues, and I see that as a helpful thing,
okay,
more than hurtful.
Karen, you guys, your side is doing the chasing, so my guess is you're not worried that this may go on for a while?
Not at all. I think that Bernie Sanders' ability to raise money from small contributors and individual donors is what we're seeing is an almost inexhaustive supply of resources. Anytime that he sort of gets... what's a nicer word than attacked? Anytime that someone tries to point out problems with his positions or his campaign, I think very quickly people determine that those are not problems with his campaign, and they start giving again. So he raises money after every debate. And I think in terms of person power on the ground, he also has shown that he has the volunteers to do the get out the vote.
Okay. Now, Jason, I want to read a comment that I got from a listener who I'm wondering if this comment is some foreshadowing for where we're going, maybe before New York, or maybe if this thing really does go on into the spring. And so this is what Josh writes to us, and Josh being a Clinton supporter, but he said that it's very important to remember that Hillary Clinton is fighting against Bernie Sanders with one hand tied behind her back. It's been a balancing act for her. Bernie's pro-Sandinista, pro-Soviet leanings have been known for years, and she has chosen not to attack him at that very vulnerable spot. She knows she needs these voters in November, and defeating him in the least bloody way is the best way for her to do it. But in other words, if she has to start cutting him more deeply, she'll do it. She'll preview what would be an attack against Bernie in a general, in the way that you would expect Republicans to do it if she has to. She hasn't done it yet. She's pulled punches. Do you agree or disagree?
I'm a bit confused by the question, but I'll sort of answer it. I think that she has certainly attacked Senator Sanders. Certainly that attack has been ramped up recently. For example, her criticism of his vote, which she claimed was against the auto bailout, but was actually a much more expansive bill that would have given a lot more money to the banks that had been recklessly speculating for more than a decade. And in fact, the New York Times today ran a very kind of critical op-ed piece about Hillary Clinton's critique of Sanders' vote, among other things. So I think she has gone after him actually quite unfairly in some respects. But this question that she hasn't gone after him sufficiently because of his Soviet leanings, I don't think that he has ever expressed any leanings or great appreciation for the Soviet Union. And as for his position towards the Sandinistas, people forget, and there was an article actually in the Washington Post yesterday, that position that Senator Sanders took against the Sandinistas in the pro-Nicaraguan, that was a sort of standard liberal position in the 1980s, especially against the Reagan administration. So I think trying to tar and feather him with this kind of leftist epithet is not working.
Okay.
It's not working.
Okay, so forget Sandinistas and Soviets, though. Are you concerned that if Bernie is the nominee for November, you know Republicans are going to say the man calls himself a Democratic socialist and that the word socialist is a pejorative
right.
to many American voters? And look, I understand it, and Karen will happily fill us in on the difference between socialism and democratic socialism, and I get it. But they're going to use it, and I think part of what Josh is saying is Clinton hasn't, maybe because you got attacked left in a primary, and maybe that would actually hurt her. But in other words, I think he's saying we haven't rolled out the real heavy stuff that you'll see, and she'll do it if she has to. And then it could get really ugly.
Well, the answer to that very simply is if you look at head-to-head matchups in all of the polls that have come out, I believe that the only politician in 2016 who actually beats Donald Trump repeatedly and by a much wider margin than anyone else is Bernie Sanders.
No, they both do, I think.
They both do.
Hillary Clinton beats Donald Trump in some polls, but not by the margin by which Bernie Sanders does. You can even look at the statistics in New York State alone. Bernie Sanders beats every Republican by a greater margin. I think this idea that somehow the Republicans are going to find the magic pill for November to defeat Bernie Sanders and that we should all sort of vote based on fear
sure.
of that is the wrong path to go down.
I understand. And Mark Cassini on this program yesterday, he's running for Congress against Louis Slaughter. He said he'd rather run against Clinton than Bernie Sanders. And so to your point there, when it comes to polls, Clinton and Sanders are both whooping Donald Trump nationally very, very consistently. Yeah. Sanders generally by a little bit more than Clinton, but they're both winning. And in New York State, the latest poll I saw, the Siena poll, was both Clinton, Sanders, 57-34 over Trump.
But if I may just bring up one point, and I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but there is a really brilliant piece in the last issue of Rolling Stone written by Matt Taibbi, and he imagines the first general election debate between Trump and Clinton. If you think that Bernie Sanders has gone after Clinton because of her ties to Wall Street, you have no idea what's coming, because basically Donald Trump has defeated every establishment Republican on the very issue of their ties to big donors and to Wall Street. And look at what happened to Jeb Bush. Look at what is happening to Marco Rubio. Trump has been very effective in this way. And I think he's going to, as he himself said yesterday, I haven't even started on Hillary Clinton. Once he starts on Hillary Clinton and he goes down the road of her as an establishment candidate, regardless of party, she is going to start losing ground.
You think Trump could beat Clinton?
I think Trump could beat Clinton, yes.
Okay.
That population he's talking to and using those tactics are right-wing Republican voters. Mm-hmm. The general population, the population that are going to be voting in this on November, that's not the same universe. And they don't have the same kind of issues, literally and figuratively, that some of those people that are Trump supporters have. So I don't see that as, you know, when it comes to the general, and it's Hillary against Trump. And I don't think we want to forget either that when it comes to the general, you're going to have President Obama in campaign mode also supporting, you know, our nominee. And, you know, I'm worried about the reaction from the other side. Already you see how they're acting. And if we have the president, you know, not caring about reelection at that point and being in full campaign mode supporting, you know, Hillary, that would be great for, I think, as voters and for us on Election Day. And I see them kind of reacting in even more extreme manners than they are already, which is unfortunate, but will help, you know, kind of focus people on where they should be voting on Election Day. So I don't see, you know, I'm not worried about Trump. You know, he hasn't shown any discipline. He was a little bit more disciplined last night, but that's not his, you know, he's got his campaign manager attacking reporters. You know, I mean, it's scary what's going on over there.
As if any of that has mattered, Larry. Well, none of it has mattered.
Yeah, it hasn't mattered.
We're
but,
in
know,
a nothing matters world with Donald Trump.
That is true.
Stuff.
With the Republican electorate
you're
that's voting in the primaries.
You're saying in the primary electorate.
In the primary
you're
electorate.
In the general, different story.
In the general, it's a different story. I mean, it's in the general. And again, people don't vote on those issues necessarily. They're going to vote on, you know, bread and butter issues more so. And that's what our union members vote on. They don't care as much about, you know, the theatrics that goes on. But if you're a voter and you're kind of swaying one way or the other, there's plenty of ammunition that Trump has put out there, or Cruz even, that, you know, if used against Hillary, that it wouldn't go anywhere as much as the issues she's talking about.
Okay, but Trish LaPelle is a Clinton supporter. Are you annoyed or concerned, or at least why do you think that Bernie Sanders is outperforming her in national polls right now?
Well, because I don't think anyone really knows who Bernie Sanders is. I mean, we've known who Hillary Clinton is for 30-some-odd years. I don't know if there is any oppo left on her. Is there? I mean, I honestly can't imagine that there's anything left that Hillary has said or done in her life that every American who's even remotely engaged with living in America since the 1980s doesn't know about. Whereas Bernie Sanders is known to many Democrats, maybe now, but is a pretty big unknown guy, and I would assume there are going to be many more things like the fact that he honeymooned in the Soviet Union with his wife, you know, things like that that are going to, right?
You identify as Hillary's strength in being known is exactly her weakness, because we do know who Hillary Clinton is. She is a person who 24 years ago burst onto the national scene declaring herself a conservative Democrat. And I think, in 1990, when I joined the Democratic Socialists of America, we were talking about everything that has come to pass now. The problem of free trade agreements, the problem of the healthcare not being affordable, the problem of attacks on women and women's rights, the increasing racism and the economic devastation for people of color. All of those things we were warning people about when she burst on the scene and cut welfare mothers' benefits, when she proudly called herself a conservative. I mean, I think Hillary Clinton's greatest weakness is that she is well known. I think that Bernie Sanders has been in Congress for 24 years. He is well known. And I think what everyone's concluded is that he comes across with a consistent message, and he's stayed on point on all of those issues that are widely felt and deeply felt.
Karen, it is a little disingenuous to imply that Sanders is somewhat anywhere close to equally known as Clinton. Clinton is probably the most well-known national candidate we've had on the stage. I'm just saying objectively. I'm not
sure.
Saying I don't
but he
have
hasn't
a dog
been hiding
saying,
in a closet with yeah. opinions that nobody yeah. knows
okay.
what they are.
I understand.
I mean,
that,
he has a long track record in Congress on the Hill.
I understand. But what Trish is saying is, when it comes to Oppo research, when it comes to those uncovering something that could really hurt you, she's saying she doesn't think there's anything left on Hillary Clinton. They will go back to emails, they'll go back to Benghazi, they'll do those things, but those are not new. With Bernie Sanders, they're saying, what don't we know? And, you know, is that a valid concern? Are you worried about that?
No, I am not worried about that.
No, not at all. And the thing is, I would totally agree with what Karen just said. I mean, Senator Sanders has been in politics for a very long time and has a long voting record. In fact, I think one of the part of the moral gravitas that I think Senator Sanders brings to this campaign is a long history of championing social justice, economic justice, and supporting pieces of legislation that would further that cause while also voting against pieces of legislation that won't. He is a principled politician, and I think that's going to hurt someone like Donald Trump in the general election, running against a principled politician.
All right. Before I get to the phones, one more important question now then, which is about unity. Karen, are you voting for Hillary Clinton if she's the nominee in November?
That's a decision I don't have to make yet. I think that there is a role for people to dissent and that that sends an important message to the Democrats. I also think that all of these issues are not going to go away whether Hillary is voted as the primary candidate and goes to the national elections or not. I think that Bernie Sanders has opened a door to a discourse that people are going to remember that DMV offices were shut down in largely African-American communities as an effort to repress the vote. I think millennials are going to
ask. But you can still believe
ask,
those things and still vote for her in November, knowing that Sanders has raised that. I mean,
yeah,
those
what,
aren't
I'm,
separate.
What I'm inching toward is that I think a lot of people are starting to question why there aren't third, fourth, and fifth parties in the U.S. electoral system. I mean, people are learning newly, those who are newly engaged are learning what a superdelegate is, and I don't think they're going to stop asking questions about it. So I think that there's a role for dissent, and I think that this is just the beginning.
Well, I think it's fair to say the superdelegate thing has become almost ridiculous. I saw Howard Dean sort of defiantly talking about his position on it and almost condescending about it. And yes, when Hillary Clinton comes out of New Hampshire with more delegates than Bernie Sanders, it's ridiculous. So, but I also think it would never happen. I just don't believe it would happen that the Democratic Party would allow superdelegates to shift the will of the voters. So I that's why I think they're going to do away with that silly system to begin with. It's not a good look for the party. But I understand what Karen is saying there. Trish, you look like you had a little smoke coming out of your ears when she hesitated on whether she would vote for Clinton if she's the nominee. Does that bother you hearing Democrats waver on that?
Well, it bothers me only because I wonder if Sanders would try for a third party run. I mean, he's an independent. He's not a Democrat. So
he has already said that he won't.
Okay.
He's so also said that he'll support whomever the nominee
right.
is.
Yeah, right. I suspect you will. So yeah. let's just sort of as a thought experiment say he's not going to do that. Are you going if he is the nominee? Are you voting for Bernie Sanders?
Of course.
Larry?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
I mean, Hillary's going to be the nominee, though.
I understand you think so, but you're saying yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never voted for a Republican in my life, so I can't see that.
You have a few other options.
But no,
no.
Jill Stein.
Yeah, look at Florida in 2000. I mean, if we're talking about other options, the fact that Ralph Nader took away votes, you know, and there's a butterfly ballot, which was the main issue, and it's a little bit off. But the fact that, you know, how the world changed because of George Bush becoming president after that stolen election.
I think, I'm sorry, but this has been debunked time and again. Ralph Nader did not cost Al Gore the election. The Supreme Court cost Al Gore the election. They gave the presidency to George W.
No, I agree.
But Jason, what people say is it would never have been in the Supreme Court's hands were it not. I'm not arguing for or against Nader. I'm saying in terms of the actual raw numbers, it never goes to the Supreme Court.
Working Families Party is a great party. I mean, I believe in third parties. But when it comes to national presidential elections, we're going to decide who's putting people in the Supreme Court. You know, we decide, you know, the three branches of government, one of them being the executive branch, the power that's there, and the fact that a third party candidate could give it to the Republicans, you know, and all that goes along with that, I don't see that as being a positive
okay.
in national
election. But the Clinton supporters say they'll vote for Bernie if he's the candidate. And Jason, are you voting for Hillary Clinton if she's the candidate?
I think it is far too early to answer that question. And moreover, I think it does a real disservice to democracy for the media to constantly ask the question of people who support a different candidate, will you support this other candidate? I don't have to answer that question, and it shouldn't be asked.
No, here's why I disagree with that. Throughout the debate season, we've seen very different debates in the Democrats and Republicans, haven't we? I mean, and just in terms of the tone. And it's been like dessert and broccoli. You know, but when you watch the broccoli, at the end of it, just about every time, I think Clinton and Sanders have had some very warm moments where they've said, look, it's tough on the issues, but I have felt that they actually respect each other. And that they would support one another no matter where it ends up. And I have thought, no matter where you are politically, it's somewhat comforting to see political leaders willing to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's interesting.
Well, I'm hoping that Hillary supporters are upset if Bernie supporters don't vote for Hillary. And I hope that their conclusion will be, we need to get a message to the Democrats that we've gone way too far to the right.
And the reason I think it's a fair question is, we are almost certainly going to have Donald Trump now as a nominee. And the question is there enough unity? Are you going to go through this process? It's going to be tough. It's going to be Sanders or Clinton, and then there's unity or there's not. And I got an email from yesterday from a voter who said, it's Bernie Sanders for me. And if it's Hillary, I'm voting for Trump. Yeah. Does that make sense to you, Karen?
No. I don't think there's anything that could convince me to vote for Donald Trump.
Okay. I mean, does that make any sense to you, Trish LaPelle?
No, but I see it a lot. I mean, I've seen it just online, and I've seen a lot of reactions.
I think maybe some of the Sanders supporters, they maybe have the luxury of feeling, well, you know, I'm not going to vote for Hillary if I win, and I'll be okay after the election. But a lot of people can't afford that luxury. I mean, if Trump is in, a lot of my friends and neighbors and our members of our union will not be okay with the Trump presidency, you know, and we don't have the luxury of saying, listen, our candidate didn't win the nomination as, you know, in the Democratic primary, so I'm going somewhere else or sticking home.
Maybe
they're not going to be okay come next year. You know, other people maybe would be, but I think a lot of our support, a lot of people backing Hillary, a lot of our union members don't feel they would be okay with somebody that's not that.
Well,
nominated.
Maybe a lot of Sanders supporters don't feel that they are economically secure and that they're worried. Maybe they support Sanders and they feel very strongly about Sanders because they don't want to go into debt to get a college education, something that is absolutely necessary in our country right now.
We're talking about November, not, yeah, after the primary, though.
Understood.
Trump, Cruz, any of them are not going to help those Sanders supporters anymore than Senator Clinton would or Senator Sanders would. So
maybe people will find out that what people were supporting with Bernie Sanders, and again, what people are supporting, because we're talking about a campaign in the present tense, I'd like to remind everyone, that what they were supporting were the issues. They were supporting the issue of economic inequality. They were supporting the issue of universal health care. They were supporting the issue of free college education. And that they are looking for a candidate, not a figurehead like a Bernie Sanders, but they're looking for a candidate who can win an election on those very issues that speak to the economic precarity of young people in this country.
All right, so let's do this. We got every phone line lit up. Let's get to the phones after this very, very short break. Our guests are talking about their feelings on where we're going April 19th and beyond. Bernie Sanders saying this week he thinks he can win New York State outright. He's trying to parlay the surprise success in Michigan and overtake Hillary Clinton. And so we're talking to Larry Knox and Trish LaPelle supporting Hillary Clinton, Jason Peck, Karen Vitale, who are supporting Bernie Sanders, and your phone calls and comments after this short break right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, 550 high school students gathered this week for a local day of rallying, discussion, debate, dialogue, and introspection about religion. A day of interfaith study, about respecting other cultures and traditions, about what tolerance truly means in a world that seems so intolerant lately. We'll hear from them next hour.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Tuesday's GOP primary in Florida is a must-win for home state Senator Marco Rubio. Donald Trump's campaign is also organizing volunteers on the ground.
Usually we do a contest for, you know, whoever the person in each county that does the most calls, then they get a meeting with Donald Trump.
More on the complicated ground game in Florida later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's this afternoon at 4 on your NPR News station.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and let's get Don in East Rochester, who's been waiting the longest. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. I certainly understand why the same people would support Donald Trump, and many of them would also support Bernie Sanders, because they come from the same demographic. There are people who the recession has not passed over, their living standards have been declining for many, many years, and so on. But Trump is playing the role that Adolf Hitler played in the 1933 German elections. And by that I mean, I'm not saying that Donald Trump is like Hitler or that he's a Nazi. The role he's playing is the 1% or 2% of the American ruling class is scared that these people that are angry are going to turn against them. So what do? They put a Donald Trump out there to turn all the attention away from the Wall Street billionaires and onto groups like Muslims, undocumented aliens, and so on. That those people are not any more responsible for the predicament of the working class in America than the Jews were in 1933 Germany. But the German ruling class used Adolf Hitler and the Nazis to deflect all attention away from them and onto Jews.
Thanks for the phone call. We hear the arguments, and right now I don't want to focus too much on Trump. We've done a lot of that this week. Everybody kind of needs a little bit of a breather. But I appreciate the phone call. Let me grab Stephanie next up in Rochester. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Yeah, I agree actually with what Don is saying, is that, you know, we're talking about establishment versus anti-establishment characters, and you know, it's not behooving anybody to characterize a broad swath of the American public as voting for Trump as racist because they're racist and bigoted. It's because they are frustrated. They have, you know, been disenfranchised economically, and they're not getting anything from the establishment. But what I wanted to say is that, you know, I'm a millennial who lives here in upstate New York. I met Hillary Clinton when I was in college at Wells College back in 2003. And I think she's a brilliant tactician and a brilliant politician, and I think she's had a really rough time of things. But what I really don't what really disappoints me and what I really don't like is this attitude from other Hillary supporters that I'm supposed to vote for her because of things that she's done for, you know, New York State and things that she's done for women, and then they don't go on and talk about the details. I don't hear a lot of details from the Hillary Clinton campaign, and that makes me less likely to want to vote for her. I mean, there's a certain smugness and a sort of attitude that really turns me off as a potential voter that, you know, says, well, you really ought to vote for me because of things that I've done, you know, in the past, but without actually describing what those things are. And I think if the people who are speaking on your program today want to do a service to the Clinton campaign, they really ought to talk about more specifics instead of just saying generally, oh, she's done all these things. Well, what has she done?
All right, Stephanie, thanks for the phone call. Larry Knox, you want to kick it off? Go ahead.
Well, I'm not a policy expert, but I will say both Clinton and Sanders, if you go to their websites, if you talk, you know, when you see their campaigns, when they do get to talk about issues, they both have very detailed plans. I mean, you know, Senator Sanders has put a lot out and a lot of detail on how he feels. I mean, a lot of it's on his website. Same thing with Senator Clinton, where, you know, from healthcare to, you know, education to, you know, civil justice, you know, civil rights to education reform. Both candidates have put a lot of detail out there. Now, unfortunately, and this isn't Evan's fault, but other media haven't really covered it as much. Where, you know, outside of the debates, when they are actually going back and forth in detail on issues, when it comes to an interview, when it comes to talking to people afterwards, it's about the horse race. It's hard for somebody, unless they have a part-time job, of finding, let me get the details on what these policy views are on the candidates. It's hard for people to find that. But I think, you know, Senator Clinton, she was a senator. She was a secretary of state. She has detailed issues, briefings, and, you know, you can go to the website and there's a lot of detail there. And when they go into debates, you know, there have been some tough questions where they both have answered in detail in arguing with each other and disagreeing, you know, in regards to funding and priorities. But I think they both have gone into detail on their viewpoints. They're differing in some ways, and I'm not an expert on this. I don't want to start digging into details, but it is there for you to see, you know, on the debates and on their website.
All right, Trish, you're a Clinton supporter. You want to respond to Stephanie saying she doesn't understand the specifics of Clinton's record that would lead her to support her?
I'm also really not a policy wonk at all. When I look at Hillary Clinton, I see an extraordinary woman who is quite possibly the most qualified candidate we have ever had for the president of the United States. And that's just what I as far as between domestic service and private life and foreign work, that to me is what inspires me.
But part of what Larry is saying is that both Senator Sanders and Secretary Clinton have detailed policy sections of websites.
Absolutely.
You know, there is a lot of information out there. And Stephanie, I understand you're saying you want to understand more, but whatever the candidate is, I think right now there's a good amount of information out there, and I hope you can find it, whatever candidate you're looking for information on. I want to go to John in Parma, who I think is a Bernie Sanders supporter. Is that right, John?
Yeah, 100%. And let me tell you, the reason that I would vote for Trump over Hillary is because Hillary is so centered, you may as well elect one of the other, you know, Republican candidates. At least with Donald Trump, you know exactly why he wants to be president. He probably wants to, you know, relax some of the newly enacted regulations for the banking industry so that when he's done being president, he can make another pile of money. But, you know, the very thing that is at the heart of Bernie's message is completely the opposite of what the other caller said, that, you know, it's the lowest common denominator sort of demographic, the rabble rousers that just want to see change for whatever, you know, for no specific reason, the same, you know, kind of semi-brainless people that did the, you know, camp out on Wall Street and they didn't even know why they were there. That's not what Bernie Sanders is about. Bernie Sanders, I believe the supporters that feel the strongest, like me, are intelligent, have been watching the political process in this country for years and years and decades, and nothing ever changes because, mainly, corporations are involved. And when corporations are involved, it's all based on money. And when it's all based on money, greed comes into play, and everyone is greedy.
Well,
there's only one way to change this country, and that is to get rid of corporate personhood, number one. Number two, flat tax, so there's no loopholes and everybody plays the same. It's an equal playing field. And number three, free health care like the rest of the world.
Okay, so two of the three Sanders would agree. The middle one, Sanders would certainly not agree, John. But I understand. I mean, no voter, I think, agrees with every politician on everything. Before,
would agree with corporate personhood? You don't think he would agree with getting rid of corporate personhood?
He would want to get rid of corporate. He was not for a flat tax. Yeah. He's not for a flat tax by any means.
And the Occupy movement, I mean, that issue of income inequality.
John, stay on the line, because I want our panel, I think, and on both sides, I think, you know, this is an important phone call. Stay on the line, John. Larry first, and then I want Jason and Karen.
I mean, the Occupy movement, it wasn't, you know, brainless kids sitting on, you know, outside of Wall Street. It was the whole issue, the words income inequality, if you Google them before Occupy and after, you know, it wasn't mentioned outside of, you know, progressive circles. The fact that, you know, and I think that's changed the conversation. I know with our union, which was a big part of supporting that, and our members were really engaged in getting that conversation in income inequality, 99% to 1%, something that Senator Sanders has talked a lot about, that the Senator, you know, Secretary Clinton has talked about, has been raised, and it's something that is very much out there and part of this presidential campaign now. You know, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are the exact thing that we're fighting against in regards to those things. So when it comes to, you know, somebody being a Sanders supporter and then going over to Trump based off economic populism issues, I mean, the exact establishment that you're fighting against are those two candidates on the other side.
Jason and Karen, John's on the line here. This is a fellow Sanders supporter. Go ahead.
I just want to say, probably most importantly, if you listen to the last three calls that we have received, there is one thread that binds them, and it's people saying, "I don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton." And
that's not a big scientific sample, I can tell you that.
But let's remember, this is NPR. This isn't right-wing radio.
No, I understand.
You know, and so those people are calling in saying, if Bernie Sanders doesn't get the nomination, I will vote for Trump. I would also like to point out that one of the sort of truisms that has floated around the room is that Hillary Clinton's record as a senator is a great asset to her. It's also a great liability. I think part of the reason we can all say why she lost the 2008 nominating process was because of her vote on the Iraq War. And again, that prudence now is being called into question again because Senator Sanders was there in the Congress when that vote happened. He had the same intelligence reports that she did. So this idea that somehow her experience makes her a better candidate, I would really kind of push back on. And I can understand completely why there are people who are now calling up in your listener base saying, hey, I would actually vote for Trump.
I would say, but you know, Sanders her losing in two, I mean, I worked for the Obama campaign in 2008, and, you know, it was against Hillary, you know, and a big part of that was, it wasn't just the death of his support, but it was the diversity of his support. And also he did small money, you know, donations. And it was very, I mean, Sanders has replicated a lot of, you know, that, you know, we're going to take him from the outside kind of campaigning. But You know, comparing to what the Sanders campaign is doing compared to what the Obama campaign had at that time, Sanders campaign has nowhere near, you know, the depth of the support among, you know, primary voters that Obama had now or even earlier in his campaign.
Okay, but before we let John go, anything you want to say to John, Karen? Go ahead.
I just understand that people have these deeply felt and widely felt issues, and I think that more and more people are speaking up and becoming engaged in the political system. I want to encourage people to think beyond the election cycle that elects a president and think about other types of political engagement and other types of electoral political engagement. But I don't think that you could convince me to vote for Trump for class president.
Okay. Trish, anything you want there for John? I mean, is that what concerns you as a Clinton supporter, that there's more of this out there than you were indicating earlier? You've heard from a lot of people like John who feel this way. I support Sanders and I would vote for Trump. You said you've heard that plenty.
I have heard that. I don't know what that means. I don't know if they really show up in November. I don't know if they were there last November or the November before or the November before that. You know, I don't know how many people who are currently really excited about Bernie are lifelong voters in general. I don't know if we have that information.
You'll have to wait till the end of their lifetimes to find out. I think we've just recruited a lot more lifetime voters.
But John, are you showing up in November either way?
Oh, absolutely. I'm voting in the primary, too. I'm a person who was a registered socialist for many years, and I know that, you know, the general population gets spooked by the word socialism, but everyone loves the police department. Everyone loves the water authority, the fire department. You know, the school system, those are all socialist ideas. And it's time for everyone to open their eyes, open their ears, learn a little bit more, be a little bit more, you know, sympathetic to your fellow man and how that applies to, you know, the form of government. Welfare is not evil. And, you know, everyone deserves to live a living wage lifestyle. I mean, what's happened to this country is, I'll say it again, corporations run rampant, and the sooner that we can get rid of corporate personhood, or at least put back some regulations into the banking systems and into, you know, many others, insurance systems. I mean, all those regulations that fell away when Reagan, passed them, have done more harm to our country than any single other event in history.
All right, John, thanks for the phone call. And Jason didn't like the fact that I was asking, would you support this nominee earlier? This is why. We're not that far away from November, and Donald Trump is going to win if there's a lot of that sentiment out there. I'm not saying that as a warning. I'm not picking sides. I'm saying that's why we're asking these questions.
Yeah, but I would also like us to listen to the issues that these callers are bringing up.
I think we're listening.
And I think by focusing so much on we should all panic because they might vote for Trump is not really listening to what they're saying. You're focusing on sort of the symptom of what they're saying. What I would also like to point out is this notion that income inequality was an issue that only was raised after Occupy, which I'm a huge supporter of, is not quite true. It was actually after 2008. And why did income inequality become such a huge issue after 2008? Because the entire global economy crashed because of the speculation of Wall Street. There is a movie in the Cineplex right now, The Big Short, that everyone can go see that basically explains this story. And I think that Senator Sanders has done a magnificent job of being able to show how politicians like Hillary Clinton have been tied to the banking industry for a very long time and haven't done enough to ensure that our economy can be safe from a future financial collapse.
All right. A remarkable amount of feedback. Eric just writes, that's one of the worst arguments I've ever heard. Trump over Clinton, because you know the selfish reason Trump wants to be president, doesn't make any sense. Melissa writes, Trump has contributed lots of money to the Clintons. Bernie would be much stronger against Trump in the general. A lot of back and forth here, but let me grab a couple more quick calls. We have to keep it moving. Chris, Geneva, about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm a longtime independent voter. I switched my registration to Democrat so that I could vote in the primary for Bernie Sanders. And I think I can understand why people would be voting for Donald Trump, and that he's not the ideology, but necessarily he's capitalizing on the same emotion and the same frustration that a lot of people are feeling. And I can honestly say Clinton would not see my vote in November. As a Sanders supporter, I'll go back to voting a third party if she's the nominee.
Would you vote for Trump?
Way too much history there. There's not.
But Chris, would you vote for Trump?
You can go back to her law days. And
okay, Chris, I don't have time. Chris, would you vote for Donald Trump?
No, I would not.
Okay, so you'd vote third party. So Chris is a Sanders supporter. So again, maybe Sanders is, as Karen and Jason have been saying, bringing people into the process. And the question is, are they going to be there for Hillary Clinton if Sanders is not the candidate? One more quick phone call. Joe in Fairport, 30 seconds. Joe, go ahead.
You know, one of the things I wanted to address is whether it's Sanders or Clinton, one of the benefits to Sanders is his consistent record. And one of the concerning things with Hillary Clinton is, wouldn't say flip-flop, but just inconsistencies with her message. And I think one of the things that needs to be focused on for this election is the consistency in governance, and that we've lacked that for a long time. We need a candidate who's going to represent the people and stick to his guns, what got him elected, and push that through their term as president. And the concern is with Hillary Clinton that there is too much special interest, and that if we have an option to bring in a candidate who is not tied to anyone but his own message, then I think that as a electorate, we need to really consider that.
All right. Go ahead, Trish. Some final thoughts there. Go ahead.
So, Joe, how do we do that? If Bernie Sanders becomes president, what does that mean as far as the House of Representatives and the Senate is concerned?
Well, we're hitting the end of the hour here, but you're saying that doesn't make sense to you.
Well, I don't know how a three-legged stool works with only one leg.
All right. Well, look, I think based on what's on the phone lines and everything else here, we could probably go all day with this. What it says to me is that this is a very active race. And as Jason said earlier, I think you're about to see people not only vote on April 19th, I think you're going to see a lot more organizing. I think, as Larry said, you're about to see a lot more activity. You're about to see a lot more signs. And you may even see Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders come through here. It's going to be fascinating, and we hope we'll continue the conversation.
So, Monroe for Hillary, if you're interested on Facebook.
Monroe for Hillary.
We're very excited.
Go ahead. MC4BS.com, Monroe County Bernie supporters.
MC4BS.com. Jason,
correct.
Karen, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And Trish.
Thank you.
Larry, thank you. Wish we had another hour for it. Short break, much more connections next.